Welcome back to another episode of the Jacob Johnston Show. Now, as I stated, I do plan on this episode being a short episode, and I do apologize for it getting out late. If you've been listening to the show, you know that I have mentioned that I got LASIK plus eye surgery, which has been great. My vision has never been better, and I am so blessed for that. But on the other hand, I have to wear this gear at night in order to protect my eyes, and it is horribly uncomfortable, so I'm not getting a whole lot of sleep. So I've been trying to go back and forth between just taking a break from the show versus just putting out shorter episodes. And I think right now what I'm going to do is just try to go for the shorter episodes, because I don't want to put out content just for the sake of putting out content. I want you to be able to get value out of this. And so I'm going to be going for the shorter episodes until I'm able to get rid of the headgear and get a full night's sleep. Because if I try to produce long episodes, I start losing my train of thought. I'm tired. So on and so forth, and I think you deserve better than that. So I'm going to be going for the short shows. Hopefully the headgear's gone by this Thursday, and Friday I will be able to get a good night's sleep, and next week I'll be back to the show as normal. Okay, I do thank you so much for dealing with this during this time and putting up with what I think is sometimes me losing my train of thought due to being tired and fatigued. Your support has meant a lot to me. With that said, let's go ahead and get into today's show. So I'm going to start off with something a little lighthearted here, which is kind of funny in and of itself, and I'm just going to go through this briefly, but CNN falls out of the top 10 cable networks even as Barack Obama special was aired. It was a flop. All right, so here's some of the highlights from the article from the Daily Wire. While the Obama interview earned approximately 500,000 extra viewers for Anderson Cooper 360 one night this week, only 1.4 million people watched the show. Wow, do the math here. He gets on average about 600,000 viewers for primetime cable news. That is sad. So anyways, it's a little bit more than that. More like 900,000. Sorry, tired? Don't do math when you're tired. Anyways, as a comparison here, the same night, Fox News Channel's Tucker Carlson Tonight won 2.97 million viewers. And Tucker Carlson wasn't doing anything special, and Anderson Cooper had on Obama for an hour-long special. Now, CNN has been falling out, and their ratings have been flopping ever since Biden was installed into the Oval Office. CNN actually fell out of the top 10 networks on cable news during the week of May 31st, finishing 12th. That is behind TNT, Fox News, MSNBC is doing better than CNN. Home and Garden TV is doing better than CNN. ESPN, TBS, NBC Sports, the Hallmark Channel's doing better than CNN. TLC, Discovery, and the History Channel, all doing better than CNN. Monday's marked CNN's first time exceeding 1 million viewers so far in the month of June, reported Fox News. In May, CNN failed to reach a seven-digit audience 13 out of the 31 days. That's roughly 42% of the month that they are getting less than a million viewers. Wow. And it turns out here, the main takeaway, it turns out that if you lie all the time and you get caught on camera bragging repeatedly that you are lying to your audience and running, in their own words, propaganda, you lose the trust of your audience and they will eventually go away. However, that doesn't necessarily mean it's good news for the right that CNN is going away, because apparently they're also going over to MSNBC, NBC, as people are abandoning CNN. You know, and okay, so you see them abandoning CNN because they realize that CNN is fake news, purposely running propaganda. And then what's the left's alternative? To go over to NBC, MSNBC, ABC, CBS, who all ran the same narratives on the same news story. So on the one hand, we can, you know, take some comfort, some joy, and mocking CNN for losing their ratings now that, especially now that they don't have Trump to make up stuff about. But on the other hand, it's like, really? You just abandoned CNN because, okay, you finally realize they're running fake news, so you go over to all the other networks that are running the exact same narratives on the exact same stories, running the exact same fake news. It's like, I don't know what the comparison is to this. I really don't. I mean, it's like the people who decide that they're going to leave New York for California and think things are going to be better when they're run by the exact same left-wing lunatic. But at least we got hopeful signs here that at least one of the fake news networks are going under and going under fast. In fact, I hear that there's a potential that CNN is going to be looking to sell, at least the owners of CNN, to sell the network. And I have an idea. If it comes up for sale, I will offer to buy CNN for $1. Right? I will offer to buy CNN for $1. Of course, I don't know whether I would continue running CNN or turn right around and sell it immediately to President Trump. I think that would be hilarious, don't you? To be able to go through and buy up CNN and then resell it to Trump and Trump's family. I mean, think about what it would be like for the anchors there. That would be hilarious. You know, if you wanted to be able to get a network pretty cheaply, but of course we know what would happen. The moment you sell it to Trump and Trump's family, all of a sudden, it will be dropped from all the cable packages. But on the plus side, CNN would no longer be aired to a forced captive audience at airports and lobbies and waiting rooms, right? Which is the bulk of CNN's audience anyways. All right. So anyways, that I found to be particularly funny and worth mentioning. Now on to something a little more disturbing. So as you know, like all authoritarians, the first thing that they do once they're able to seize power is to try and take away your rights. And the first two rights that they always attack is your freedom of speech and your ability to defend yourself. Now, we already seen all the attacks going on the freedom of speech, the overarching online censorship, cancel culture. We see all of that. And we see how the left is trying to redefine language to pretty much say that anything that disagrees with them is hateful, off limits. They try to get you fired. They're doing everything they can to censor speech. But they're also going after your Second Amendment rights, your ability to be able to defend yourself and defend the country should the Democrats gain enough power to overthrow the Constitution completely. And we see how they are doing that with everything that's going on with the military and the intelligence community that the left is instilling. You know, we see how they are going off and using the bureaucracy in order to try and redefine weapons in order to be able to put more bans and limit your ability to exercise your Second Amendment rights. Well, now, San Jose mayor plans to tax guns out of existence. Oh, yes. See, they're not infringing on your ability to exercise your Second Amendment. Oh, no. The guns, you know, can still be manufactured. You can still buy it. We're just going to make it so horribly expensive that you just can't afford it. It says we cannot infringe on your rights to own a gun, but that doesn't mean we can't tax you out of it. What's really the difference here? All right. So anyways, it goes on to state that with city council approval, San Jose would become the first city in the United States to require every gun owner to have liability insurance coverage for their firearm. Wait, liability insurance coverage for your firearm? I've never even heard of such coverage, such a kind of insurance. Seems kind of fishy there. Second, San Jose would become the first U.S. city to require gun owners to pay a fee to compensate taxpayers for the public cost of responding to gun violence. And here we go. The left wants to use gun violence as an excuse to be able to implement new policies to be able to take away your rights under the Second Amendment. And of course, the arguments that they make never make sense. First of all, have you ever noticed how most of the gun violence happens in left-wing cities? Most of the racism, most of every problem in this country happens in cities that are almost exclusively dominated by left-wing politics, by the Democrat Party, and how it's the Democrat Party's policies that create the problem, and then they use the problem that they create in order to try and justify taking action that strips you of your rights and freedoms and grows the power of government. Now, let's take a look at this. First off, this whole policy, the liability insurance, the increased taxes, none of that would do anything whatsoever in order to stop gun violence because they're not actually targeting the root cause. They're targeting law-abiding citizens and punishing law-abiding citizens for the actions of criminals. I mean, that's like telling, I'm trying to figure out the best way to say this, But that's like saying we need extra taxes on your vehicle because some people steal vehicles and get into car crashes with, right? Because somebody, you know, steals a vehicle and, you know, drives around at high speed during a chase and hits somebody. Therefore, because the criminal stole a vehicle and got into an accident, we must charge law-abiding vehicle owners more money for the cost of policing carjackers. Or, hey, you know what? A lot of people are murdered by hammers every year in crimes of passion. You know, this would be like the left saying, hey, because a lot of people steal hammers or take hammers and kill people with hammers, we need to make sure that you have liability coverage on your hammer and tax you extra money for your hammer because somebody else is doing something criminal with it, you know, or stole something or, you know, whatever. I mean, what they're doing doesn't make any sense because criminals are not getting their guns the same way as law-abiding citizens. How are criminals getting their guns? Well, they're getting their guns in some part from the cartels, the same way they get drugs that flow across our borders during Democrat administrations, open border policy. And so this does nothing to the criminals. They're not going to buy any liability insurance. They're not going to go off and pay extra taxes. They're just going to get their guns smuggled from across the border. And of course, there are other criminals that get their guns from, hey, guess what? From people who know how to make guns that aren't in business or any legal business. They just make the guns themselves. They have the machinery in order to make various guns themselves and then sell them to criminals. Criminals don't go into a gun store and purchase a gun. They can't. And so what we got here is trying to punish the innocent for the actions of the guilty. And they're trying to create this whole, you know, this whole system here whereby they try to claim that, you know, gun violence is a blanket rather than criminal violence. They don't want to actually take a look at and have an honest conversation about this. And the whole idea of paying extra taxes to compensate taxpayers for the public cost of responding to gun violence. Hello, you want certain groups of people to pay you more money just to do your damn job. Here's an idea. How about we enact a special tax on Democrats for engaging in reckless policies that embolden criminals to engage in more violence? Because all this is doing right here, all of this, the only result that we are going to see from this whole, you know, require extra insurance coverage and increased, you know, taxes, all we're going to see here is more gun violence as a result. Why? Because you're doing nothing to curb or stop the ability of criminals to get a hold of guns to commit violence. But what you are doing is you are creating more defenseless victims. And the reason why gun violence is so high in left-wing cities is because the victims are generally unarmed and defenseless. There is no rocket science to this. The more the criminals realize that they have guns and their victims do not, the more emboldened they are to engage in more gun crimes, more criminal activity. Why? Because the risk to them is perceived as very low. And so the more you attack the Second Amendment, the more you are actually encouraging criminal activity and behavior. Because the criminals, they're still going to get their guns. They're going to come across the border, the unsecured border. They're going to, just like drugs do, they're going to be able to just manufacture the guns themselves. The ability, the technology, and the machinery already exists. But of course, the Democrats don't care because their ultimate goal is to overthrow the Constitution. But they can't do that while there are still gun owners, large quantities of gun owners who are willing to rise up and fight for their freedom. Now, I am losing confidence in how much, you know, the people exercising their Second Amendments are actually going to rise up and fight back against an authoritarian government who plans on overthrowing the Constitution. I mean, hell, we got a fraud in the White House right now. Unconstitutionally seated in the White House right now. We have an illegitimate government right now and nothing. I mean, Joe Biden in the White House has been proven to be fraudulent and nothing. And he's destroying the country and yet nothing. You know, it's because of all of our technology and luxuries that people are willing to, I guess, put up with such unbelievable levels of corruptions and assaults on our freedoms, but maybe, just maybe, there is a line in which overstepping and overthrowing our constitutional rights will cause people to rise up. And this is why the left spends all their time on attacking free speech and attacking our Second Amendment rights. They attack our free speech in order to get us to feel isolated as if we're in the minorities. After all, we don't see or hear a lot of people talking the way we talk, sharing the same views and opinions we view. Not because they don't have them, but because they're being suppressed, censored, and blocked. So you're just unable to hear them and see them, and that creates an isolation effect. And then they attack our Second Amendment because they don't want us to have the ability to defend ourselves. So the left purposely engages in policies that are designed to increase pain, suffering, increase and give criminals more leeway, embolden criminals by creating more defenseless victims, and then using the criminal behavior in order to create more defenseless victims as an excuse so that they can keep chipping away at our Second Amendment rights with the ultimate goal of overthrowing the Constitution and our democracy. You want to be able to stop gun violence? I tell you what, how about this for a government program? A government provides every citizen of this country a free gun, a handgun and a rifle. You do that, and guess what? Gun violence will virtually disappear. Because all the criminals will know that every single person they come across is potentially armed, has the ability to defend themselves. It increases the risk to criminals engaging in criminal activity. If they know that any time they engage in a criminal behavior, it can result in about a dozen people around them pulling out their guns and holding the criminal for the police to come get them, it kind of changes the calculus of risk versus reward a little bit. But so long as the Democrats are chipping away at the Second Amendment rights and creating more defenseless victims for criminals, the more emboldened they get because there's lower and lower risk for them because their victims are defenseless and there's higher reward as a result. Because their victims are defenseless, they have complete control over that victim, seeing as how the criminal is the only one armed in most of those situations. So the Democrats and their policies are directly causing gun violence. And it's not just their attacks on the Second Amendment, it's their policies across the board. It's the fact that they're constantly attacking the economy, trying to keep people down. They're going through and creating poverty, engaged in activities that causes inflation to go up. Their entire spectrum of reckless spending, causing vast and mass inflation, and crushing the economy wherever they can, to keep people down, to keep them broke, to keep them desperate. And so people crack. Criminals manage to be able to get a hold of guns because, well, they come across the border. Or you got criminals with the ability to just make them themselves. And out of desperation or whatever the motive is, they go out there and they victimize people, knowing the people that they are victimizing are defenseless. 99% of the problems in this country would be solved if every Democrat at every level was voted out of office. Now, luckily, there is pushback. There's pushback in some isolated areas of the country. And look, we need to go through and have a lot of primary challenges in the Republican Party against the rhino class and against those who are just completely useless, right? And get more people who are America First Trumpians into elected office in order to be able to mount an effective pushback and basically set the Democrats back 100 years on their attacks of this country. And luckily, we do see in some pockets of the country where Republicans are actually standing up and they are actually fighting back. So, for instance, two Nevada counties go constitutional. Yes, and so basically what this is stating here, and this comes from NTD News, is that elected commissioners in two Nevada counties declared that the Bill of Rights will be upheld in their jurisdiction. Now, isn't it amazing that we actually have to assert that we will uphold the Bill of Rights, that, hey, we will not allow an infringement on the constitutional rights of our people? That used to just be the norm to go without saying. Now you're considered bold and you're considered to have a backbone by saying, hey, we are going to defend the Constitution from government overreach and unconstitutional violation of our rights. And they say that they're going to do so even if it means standing against unconstitutional acts by the state and federal authorities. And so, yes, you know, we see that there's a lot of things that are going on. The government is acting outside of its constitutional limits, violating our Constitution rights, violating the Constitution all over the place, attacking our democracy. And so now we are actually having to organize groups of people in order to defend our constitutional rights against the government, whose sole job is to obey the Constitution and to defend our rights under the Constitution. And yet the Democrats, just being supported by the media, are the biggest threat to our democracy we have ever known. Understand that. Now, of course, the Democrats want to say, no, white supremacies are the biggest threat to this country. White supremacy? You can't even find enough white supremacists in this country to fill a Walmart and a small town. And you're going to say they're the biggest threat? There is a reason we don't see anything in the news anymore about white supremacist violence or terrorist acts from white acts. getting a little caught up there. But why we don't see acts of terrorism from white supremacists. And it's basically the same reason why we don't consider dinosaurs a threat. Because when things are extinct, they stop becoming a problem. Now, no, white supremacists aren't completely extinct. I get that. But they can't even fill up a Walmart in a small town. That's how low their numbers are. And they want to say that's the biggest threat? No, the Democrat Party, left-wing ideology, is the biggest threat today that America has ever known throughout its entire history. And we need to start learning to take that threat seriously. Democracy is great, but we got to work hard in order to protect democracy. And the Democrats are making the fight to protect democracy unbelievably hard. I mean, you take a look at the Democrats right now. They're doing the same thing Stalin did during his rise to power. They're doing the same thing Hitler did during his rise to power. Heck, they're doing everything that Mao did during his rise to power. They are using the playbook of every mass murdering dictator of the last 100 years. And that's what they are implementing right now. And of course, just like Stalin, just like Hitler, just like Mao, they are supported by a dishonest media who hasn't learned the lessons of history, who think that they are the power behind the throne and that they're the ones who are really going to be dictating policy. And yet history shows us that the media is the first one to be lined up against the wall and shot because while they're useful idiots for these murderous tyrants to get into power, they become the biggest threat once they're in power. But the media is too stupid to realize that. They're too historically ignorant. So yes, the Democrats are the biggest threat to this country that we have ever known in our entire history, and it is now considered brave to say you're going to defend and uphold the Constitution, that you're going to defend a person's constitutional rights. That's being considered bold. And those who say, I'm going to defend the Constitution, are going to be attacked mercilessly by the left. Understand that. You got to understand who we are dealing with, which is why more and more I keep thinking about running for office, the platform that I would run on. And I know exactly who I would need to challenge in order to do so in the Republican primary. Is because, you know, and the reason why I keep thinking of this is not only because this person supported the bogus Mueller and probe, but has been in office for so long, they're completely disconnected, have no concept of what the left really is today, and is just generally useless, has not actually done anything to stand up for and defend this democracy. Just basically runs and hides whenever the Democrats are on the march and comes out with a fluff bill when the dust starts to settle. Now, I haven't gone off and fully made the decision yet. I'm still in conversations with my wife about whether or not to run because, well, there are some, well, concerns. She doesn't want to move to D.C., and I'd have to spend a lot of time in D.C., and I would be sacrificing time away from my family in order to spend my time with a bunch of backstabbing snakes who would throw their own mothers over a cliff if it meant hanging on to power. So, I mean, best case scenario, I run for office and win. That doesn't really seem like a good victory for me. But then again, it goes back to the old quote, for evil to prevail, it requires good men to do nothing. And right now, the Democrats are prevailing by attacking our democracy, attacking our elections. You know, I guess I got to be willing to do something, make sacrifices in my own life, doing something that I don't want to do in order to guarantee that there's freedom and democracy for my kids when they get older. It's just unbelievable. The Democrats, like the media, have positioned themselves as the enemy of democracy. Okay, and you know what? Looking at the time here of this podcast, I guess it is going to end up being a full episode. Okay, all right. So anyways, one of the things that has been coming up more and more is all of the things going on in the public education system. One of the blessings of COVID-19 and the schools being shut down and kids having to learn from home, you know, remote learning, is that parents actually got to see what the schools were teaching their kids. Because parents were going unaware for so long. They were just so busy getting up, going to work, and just trying to get through their daily lives that they were just entrusting the schools to actually be engaged in education. And they found out instead they were engaged in indoctrination. And so there's been a more laser-like focus on the schools, a big, huge spotlight. And the more we examine the public education system, the more disgusted we are with what the left has done and turning the education system into indoctrination camps. And so another example of this, besides the critical race theory and 1619 projects, which is all based off of complete bull crap, is now we start seeing how teachers are treating students differently. Oh yes. So from the right scoop, teacher bullies student over Pride Month cupcake. Oh yes. So a teacher decides that they're going to bring in cupcakes, and somebody in the classroom was videoing this, and a straight person, a straight, you know, guy asked, hey, why isn't that we don't get cupcakes? You know, why is it only gay students getting cupcakes? I mean, it seems like the teacher was specifically excluding people. It's not like they were bringing out different cupcakes for different people. They were only giving cupcakes to the LGBT community. And what was the teacher's response? Well, it was caught on video. The student was being called a jerk and a dip while the teacher passed out LGBT themed cupcakes in celebration of Pride Month. So basically it was saying that, hey, if you're not part of the LGBT community, you're a jerk. You're horrible. You're disgusting. Now, my whole thoughts on the LGBT community is that you need to drop the T because the T is not a real thing. In fact, the T pretty much eliminates the LGB part of that community. So they were at a school party and two girls were also, this teacher was, let me just set this up, also involved in other horrible things here. You know, for instance, you know, at a school party, two girls were having sex in the bathroom. This teacher said, they are gay, so they can't make a baby, so I really don't care. Okay, so if you're LGB, you get to have sex in the school during a party. That's kind of a problem. School is not where you're supposed to be getting laid. It's supposed to be where you are getting an education. But in any event, so they're going off and giving preferential treatment, allowing their gay students to do things that their straight students would be expelled for. And then they're setting it up where they celebrate the LGB community in school and demonize if you're basically straight, if you prefer members of the opposite sex and you recognize yourself for who and what you are. And they demonize that. And it's horrible what's going on. Now, luckily, though, this does have a good ending as the teacher has been, will no longer be returning to the Springfield Public School. All right, so the teacher has been fired, suspended indefinitely without pay, however it is that you want to say it. So luckily, this horrible teacher, because of the spotlight that they were placing, and then let's get this straight, the school wasn't concerned about what the teacher was doing, only that the teacher was getting caught at it. But I'll still chalk it up as a victory for the right. And when we go through and we take a look at examples as this, as well as all the Marxist ideology that is being pumped in to the school system, well, parents have had enough. And we've all seen the videos that have gone out there of the school board being taken to task by parents and parents of all races and all and both genders taking the school board to task. And the school board tries cutting off their mic, calling them a bunch of names in response, which is really, really stupid on the school board side. But now we have parents that are deciding, hey, you know what? It's time to go full bore into this fight. And so now there's a national parent group formed to fight woke education. And of course, they're going to use the same type of model that was used by the left in the formation of BLM, you know, having in the sense that they're going to have chapters and member organizations. Hey, that is great. You know, and so as this parent forming this group stated, it was that, and I quote, "My husband and I looked at the lesson plan and opened the links to the books that they included for the lesson plan, and we were thoroughly horrified because they were all totally racist," she told the Epoch Times. "The school materials examined followed what she called woke culture, a set of quasi-Marxist ideology that divides society into oppressors and oppressed based on the characteristics such as race, sex, class, and sexual proclivities. The term woke is sometimes used interchangeably with critical race theory, which is only one of the ideologies that operate within this framework. The events that followed led to the launch of a group that now runs chapters in nearly half the states, sporting tens of thousands of followers. This is ridiculous," she said. She told herself, "This is going to take over our country. They are attacking our children. They are attacking our families, our values, and our way of life. And we're just going to sit around and take the bullet? And people are just afraid just because someone called you a racist." In that moment in late August, it hit me and I launched a movement, she said. So yes, we are seeing that parents are standing up and they are taking action and they are forming organizations, nonprofit organizations, taking in funding in order to fight back against the Marxism. And of course, Marxists always target the public education system. This was even explained back in the 1980s with Soviet defectors saying that ideological subversion, its main target is the public education system. Why? Because you have a captive audience with inherent trust, you control the narrative with zero pushback, and the audience is forced to regurgitate everything you say or get a failing grade. It goes from the very beginning to the very end of their education. The indoctrination, the warping of reality, so complete that they can ensure that no amount of facts or data will ever be able to convince them of the truth. They will only believe or understand their indoctrination, being insulated from the truth in all shapes and forms. It is just very sickening what they have done. But luckily, yes, parents are rising up and they are taking action. And we are seeing Republican-controlled states stepping up and banning this toxic ideology from our school systems. And this toxic ideology that the left keeps pushing is the exact same ideology of Stalin, Hitler, and Mao, some of the biggest mass murderers of the last 100 years. So why is it that the left keeps celebrating, promoting, and copying the ideologies and playbooks of the biggest mass murderers of the last 100 years? You got to wonder. And then you take a look at the entire history of the Democrat Party, and you got to wonder, how the hell is the Democrat Party still a party in the United States? They are behind and been responsible for every moral stain in American history, every atrocity that they now use to basically demonize the United States, claiming that they will solve the problems that result from historic injustice that they themselves created. Now, some of you may be going out there and wondering, well, what have I done for the public education? Have I gone to any school board meetings recently? Is there any videos of that where you could see me blasting the school board for their teachings, for their Marxist ideologies, and all of that? No, I'll be flat up with you. The answer is no. I haven't gone to any school board meeting, quite simply because I don't have kids in the public education system. If I go to a school board meeting, no one's going to listen to somebody who doesn't have kids in that school blasting that school. You know, what I did, what me and my wife did, is we pulled our kids out of the public education system and switched to homeschooling so that they won't be subjected to that racist Marxist ideology being pushed by the left. We took them out completely. And I got to tell you, homeschooling has proven to be a much superior form of education for our kids. Their reading has improved by leaps and bounds. Their math skills. They are learning economics right away in elementary school. Right? They're going to be learning economics throughout the entire course of their education. History class. Oh, yes, I love teaching them history, especially American history, and teaching them about the actual founding principles of our country and so much more. They're not going to be falling for the left. In fact, I'm developing a course here to help educate kids, at least my kids, on left-wing propaganda and fake news so that they won't be suckered by it. So no, I don't show up at school boards because I just took my kids out of school, right? I mean, yes, I do encourage you to go to school boards of the schools that your kids are actually in. If you have kids in the public school system, then yes, you should be going to the school boards and blasting them for their hateful Marxist anti-American ideology that they are pushing on the kids. All right. This next story is just kind of funny here. Okay. So there's an article that I got from Newsmax.com here. Senator McConnell says he'll intervene in GOP primaries if necessary. Okay. This is where it gets funny. And it also goes to show what the biggest problems are that we have in this country, why things keep getting worse and worse in Washington, D.C. So during a radio interview, McConnell was asked if he and the Senate Leadership Fund, an external group connected to the leader, would be willing to interfere with 2022 Republican primary. If necessary, McConnell told conservative radio host Hugh Hewitt, I mean, you're recalling the same period I am, 2010 and 2012, when we nominated four or five candidates by being passive in primaries that simply could not appeal into a general election audience. Who the hell does McConnell think he is? All right. So what you're saying here is that the Republican leadership in D.C., that a Kentucky senator is saying that he will intervene and interfere with the primary elections of every other state. And of course, he tries to justify it by saying, well, these people, you know, if they don't think that they can appeal to a general election audience, well, who the hell do you think you are? Huh? I mean, here it is, McConnell, who doesn't have much of a, you know, approval rating among conservatives or among the base that operates in the primaries, is going to go off and try and dictate anything to anybody. I mean, people like McConnell is what the problem is with the Republican Party. But it's also why incumbents are so hard to be able to defeat. Why, with just 13% approval ratings, they get reelected 90% of the time is because they use their offices in order to try and rig the outcome of primary elections in their favor, as well as general elections. They go off and we have people raising funds from all over the country. So you got money being raised in Florida, California, New York, and such, and then being spent to influence the outcome of elections in Iowa or Nebraska or Kansas. Now, am I the only one that thinks this is wrong? I mean, if I were to run for office, one of the first things that I would do is a constitutional amendment that not only bars corporations from getting involved in campaign activities, can't donate to politicians, can't engage in a campaign for politicians or run political ads for politicians. But it would also be to bar anybody from outside of a state from being able to financially contribute or engage in any campaign activities within that state for state elected offices. You know, whether that's for the local county sheriff to the Senate and the House of Representatives, that politicians can only raise funds from the people from whom they would be elected to represent That would be one of the things that I would be working on if I were to run for office. But I mean, here it is. McConnell going off saying he's going to try and interfere and mess with the Republican primaries so that only the swamp approved rhinos get elected. And of course, they're going to use their money to outspend in advertisement anything that their primary challengers come up with. So it's not just the donations that the incumbent gets, but from all these other groups that are going to be piling on, trying to drown out any competition to that incumbent. Because we can't have, according to them, another Trump-like figure get into office. No. Somebody who would actually do something. Someone who would actually take actions and put the American people first. We can't have that. They want only swamped-approved rhinos to be able to get into office. Now, that means interfering in elections, challenging Democrat seats, but it also involves challenging Republican incumbents. You know, you can't have that. Now, this is funny because McConnell thinks that he has any sway, voice, or influence within the Republican Party. Now, I don't know how the hell he manages to remain the leader of the Republicans in the Senate. That baffles me. How the hell does he manage to hold on to power when there are Republicans in there, like, say, Ted Cruz, who are vastly more popular than McConnell could ever hope to be? McConnell is a disgrace. You can barely call him a conservative. He is a rhino. His approval ratings among the Republican Party is under 20%. All right. And so he plans on coming out and trying to work against Trump, who will be going out there and trying to endorse candidates himself. Now, let me get this straight. McConnell, with an approval rating under 20%, is going to try and meddle in elections, thinking he has more sway or influence than, say, Trump, who has, what, a 90-95% positive approval rating among Republicans? Yeah. You know, the McConnell's going to lose in this one. But what gets to me is the arrogance that he's going to go in and try and interfere with the primary election. Whatever happened to the idea that we, the voters, should be able to choose our elected representatives? That we should have free and fair elections where the candidates are able to go out there, say what they stand for, what they would do, and then we, the voters, decide. But apparently, the swamp doesn't like the idea of we, the voters, being able to decide, which is why we get into this type of situation. Candidates who go out there and just lie their butts off, censorship by the major tech companies, and then all these billionaires and millionaires piling up in elections to which they have no reason, or I shouldn't say no reason, but have no business getting involved in, because it's not about their elected representatives. It's not about their representation. They're meddling in the elections of politicians for other people's constituency, not just their own. Think about that. And they're piling up to outspend to basically make it so that you only hear one politician because, you know, repetition. You know, tell a lie big enough, long enough, often enough, it becomes accepted as true, which is why they go through and spend so much money on campaign advertisements rather than getting the side-by-side comparison or being able to allow equal ability and time for the candidates to be able to explain what it is they stand for, what it is they would do, and how they feel they are different from the other person. No, it's people in California, New York, Florida, you know, Texas. You know, you take your pick trying to bombard into the elections of, say, Iowa, of, say, Nebraska or Canada, and not Canada, but Kansas, sorry, you know, and trying to get in there and influence. So you have Texas, Florida, California, New York trying to influence the voters of Kansas, Nebraska, and Iowa, trying to tell them who they should vote for. Here it is. I'm thinking businesses and corporations should be banned from being able to donate to politicians or engage in any campaign activities whatsoever, that only groups that are actually located within the state can set up for, you know, political action committees. Only for those who are in the state should be able to engage in any campaign activities, and only from funds raised from within the constituency that would be electing that politician. That would clear things up quite a bit. But yeah, This is what sickens me, because McConnell is part of the swamp. McConnell is part of the problem. I mean, think about how much support he gave to the baseless Mueller probe, the Democrats' use of government to target Trump or basically any Republican that is not swamp approved. McConnell has to go. He has been nothing but a complete and total disgrace. Sure, he got through some judges. Sure, I guess, whatever. You know, but beyond judges, he has been completely useless. He has just been a doormat for the Democrats. The only time he ever acts tough is when going into an election year and his majority leadership is on the line. His power is on the line. You know, but in any conversation of McConnell versus Trump, Trump's going to win every single time. Anyways, it just sickens me, the narcissistic nature of these politicians. Yes, if I don't believe they could appeal to a general election audience, I'm going to interfere in the primaries and try and help rig the result. Yeah, huh. This coming from somebody who didn't think Trump had a chance in the 2016 general election and wiped the floor with Hillary Clinton, went on to be one of the most successful presidents, and then through election fraud was the only way to oust him in 2020, having received, oh man, the most votes an incumbent president has ever received, and has grown the Republican Party, you know, grown support for the Republican Party within minority communities far more than any other Republican in decades. Yeah. Okay. So there's one last thing that's going on here that I want to be able to talk about. So Tucker Carlson, I mean, it's amazing how often Tucker Carlson ends up getting a clip for a big segment. I mean, he does some pretty good work. Now, I only catch clips. I don't actually watch Fox News. I don't have cable. You know, I just switch to all internet TV. So that means I get Newsmax, but I don't get Fox News. Not that I would really watch Fox News to begin with. They've had some problems. But from what I gather here, you know, Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity are what's left of Fox News. I mean, some people will talk about Judge Jeanine or the Ingram angle or whatever. I don't really catch much of them, so I can't really comment too much on them. But I catch a lot of clips on Rumble or YouTube when researching the show, you know, or researching content for the show. I come across a lot of things by Tucker Carlson. He seems to nail a bunch of things out of the ballpark. Well, one of the things that Tucker Carlson reported on recently is that investors are buying up middle-class neighborhoods. So he was going off and talking about how home prices are skyrocketing, even beyond that of the inflation crisis that is now developing under Biden due to, well, due to a lot of reasons, actually. And I can't say it's 100% because of Biden, but Biden's policies are really going to be keeping the economy down, crushing it. So, of course, inflation is going to be even worse now, even though it's probably an issue that started under Obama and a lot of out-of-control, reckless spending. You know, the one thing that Trump did not manage to be able to fix. So, anyways, home prices are going up, and there is a big focus now on buying up middle-class neighborhoods. Now, why is that? Why do you think it is that a lot of mega corporations are now starting to get into buying up middle-class single-family homes in middle-class neighborhoods, suburbs? They're buying them up and what? Turning them into rental properties? But why would you do that? I mean, I'm trying to go off here and trying to see whether or not there's any reasonable, rational, nefarious reason for doing this. Because, I mean, let's think about this for a moment. If you're buying a single family home, that is basically the poorest of investments when it comes to rental properties. And I say that because take a look at what the break even would be. You know, so you buy a property for what, $300,000 to $500,000? No, a normal person would put that on a 30-year mortgage, taking them 30 years to get back. So in order for the company to break even at a 30-year mark, they would have to charge what the banks would charge on a mortgage. But if they want to decrease how long it takes for them to be able to get a rate of return or break even on this investment, they have to jack up the prices beyond that of what the banks would charge on a mortgage. Now, if they're going up and buying up all these single-family homes in middle-class neighborhoods, which means they're going to turn middle-class neighborhoods into renter a territory, right? Not that I'm saying there's anything wrong with renters. Heck, I've spent time renting myself, you know, but when you turn a neighborhood into renters, it destroys the value of the community. It does that because renters do not take care of their property as well as homeowners do. And as property values start to drop, what happens? More and more people are going to try and sell while their property values have value to them to try and move to another area. Now, this is buying up supply, decreasing the supply of available homes, which is also taking part in jacking up home prices. But why would you think people would be interested in trying to buy up middle-class neighborhoods and turn them into rental property? And the only thing that I can think of in all reality is that we are seeing an attack on the middle class here. I mean, think about this. If you wanted to destroy the middle class, one of the biggest things that you can do is end home ownership, turn everybody into renters. Now, this is going to be a long process, yes, for sure, but you'd start turning everyone into renters. Nobody owns a home anymore. That would be the most devastating blow to the middle class. Because what happens? Well, if you're renters, then you have no guarantee in home and what your home price is. Think about this. If you buy a home, even if you get a mortgage and you have a fixed rate mortgage, then every year for 30 years or 15 years or whatever the term of the mortgage is, you have a fixed monthly payment. It doesn't matter what the economy does. It doesn't. It doesn't matter if the economy is booming or tanking. Your mortgage payment is the same. And at the end of that mortgage term, what happens? You own the property and you have no more payments. Well, except for property taxes. So now you have no more payments, that which means the income that you make is not going to the bank, which means you free up a mortgage payment out of your paycheck each and every month from the time you got the home paid off to the time that you retire. What does that do? That allows you to build up wealth, allows you to build up for your retirement, and gives you the ability to pass something on to your kid. But what if there's no more home ownership? Because these big mega corporations keep buying up all the properties and all the middle class homes. All right. Now, first, I question about the wisdom of this investment. But okay, let's say that, you know, they're doing this. Well, what happens now? Now you've effectively destroyed the middle class because they no longer have any home ownership. What does that mean? Anybody who has spent any time from renting knows that every year there is a potential for their rent to go up. So every year when you get a pay raise, what happens? Your rent, your lease renewal comes out. And wouldn't you know it? The increase in rent is probably what the average pay raise is in the United States, that same percentage mark. So it wipes out your raises and you're unable to get anywhere. And as time goes on, they start jacking it up, the rent more and more and more, destroying your income, taking away more and more money. So when you take away home ownership and try to turn everybody into renters, you can then destroy a person financially by constantly charging higher and higher and higher rent, taking away more and more of their income, guaranteeing that they won't have money to be able to save up for their retirement, to be able to pass on to the next generation. You can take away whatever wealth they have and jack things up to crush them down into poverty. That's why I say I'm seeing this as an attack on the middle class, trying to take away and destroy home ownership and turn the country into a nation of renters. We see this as a trend that is starting to grow. Now, of course, there's a lot of people who aren't selling their properties, are going to hold on to it for decades. So is this going to be overnight? No. But it is a trend that is going to be starting to grow. And they're going to try and buy up as many single family homes and middle class neighborhoods as possible to destroy home ownership so that they can constantly attack the middle class by giving them no option but to rent and then keep jacking up the rent to destroy whatever income they have. And the longer this goes on, the faster or the more the middle class will be destroyed. The left is nefarious here. And why these businesses and corporations have decided to go leftist, I don't know. I only have, you know, an idea here, and that is they're already established in the top echelons of their industry, and they go through to support left-wing politics because leftists, being the authoritarians that they are, will use the power of government to protect them from competition and ensure their dominance remains in a particular market, not being disrupted by new technologies and new entrances. That's the main reason why so many corporations are going off and supporting the left, because they view the left as the mob paying them protection money. And so Tucker Carlson was, you know, he has a good eye for detail of seeing problems that are emerging here. Now, he didn't necessarily say that this was an attack on the middle class, you know, himself, but I'm just going off, taking a look at what his report is, what the information he gave, and I'm making my own conjectures here, that if you wanted to destroy the middle class, destroying home ownership would be the first step, because then, you know, unlike a mortgage, a rental agreement, your payment every month changes every year. You can destroy an entire class of people financially simply by denying them the ability of home ownership and being able to adjust the rent based off of that person's income in order to ensure that they never have enough extra money to build up wealth for their retirement or to pass on to their kids. Everything the left does is designed to destroy the country. All right, so that's it for this particular episode. I was thinking this episode was only going to be about 20 minutes. Yeah, my perception of time is pretty horrible. I'm going to have to find a way to cut down on how much I talk about each and every episode. But I do want to thank you for taking the time to listen in. I very much appreciate that. If this is your first time listening, don't forget to leave me a rating and a review if you haven't done so already. Don't forget to subscribe. And don't forget to share this on social media platforms. At least, you know, you can share them on the free speech platforms. All right, thank you so much. And I will be back again soon.